Good. Yeah. Coming together.
The September 5th, 2013 meeting of the City of Petaluma Transit Advisory Committee is called to order at 4:02. Ms. Capel, you want to call roll?
Alden.
Here.
Irvin.
Here.
Jen.
Here.
Goff.
Here.
Kearney.
Here.
Leventhal. McLean.
Here.
Approval of minutes from the June 27th meeting. Does anybody have any comments regarding those minutes? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. Public comment. Is there anyone here to make public comment today? Hearing none, we'll move on. Ms. Capel, any correspondence?
There is no correspondence.
And with that, we can move into, actually, no. Before we get to old business, let me just mention we have two new members of the committee today. Dana Irvin, sitting to my far left, far right of people watching on television. And Roger Leventhal, who may join us shortly, but is not here yet. So thank you very much for applying. We look forward to your expertise.
Thank you.
And then old business. Mr. Rye, you want to talk about the August 2013 service changes?
Thank you, Chair Alden, TAC members. This item is just to briefly, we'll touch on some of the stuff also in the manager's report because there's fresher data in that because I didn't make the deadline. This one describes an update on the changes we made effective 3 weeks ago. The extended Sunday service, we extended Sunday hours on both routes that run on Sunday by an hour. And initially, the productivity is 5.5 riders per hour over the first couple of weeks. So that's pretty good. It's about, you know, pretty close to what the regular Sunday productivity in the other hours is, so I'm actually pretty pleased with that. The introduction of Route 1 and 24 on Saturdays was a major improvement for the Saturday service, so we went from two buses out there all day to three. And that one, let's see. That one got off to a little bit of a slow start. It's doing about three riders per hour over the first couple Saturdays of service. And we certainly hope that comes up. Our overall Saturday ridership system-wide is around 15, which is pretty productive. So this is quite a bit lower than that, so we'll be monitoring it closely. It may need some marketing push, and we'll have to talk about that maybe at next meeting. What we have been very busy with over the last couple of weeks since school started is the expansion of the PM tripper capacity. So what was approved was to do roughly an hour of extra service. What we initially rolled out was a little under an hour, but then 3 days into school, as we'll talk about a little bit more on the manager's report, 3 days into it, we realized we needed a little more service, so now we are at about an extra hour. So, and it's a very productive hour, so that's going really well. I think that's it. I'll take questions if the TAC has any.
Joe, those three riders per hour you said, where were they? Which route were they on? Were they going to the shopping centers or were they going to another area?
That I don't have information within the trip level, so I'd have to dig in further to that. And we don't have an AVO automatic system, so I don't know. I'd be able to get you that without riding along during the day or having someone do that and actually identify where they're getting on and off at. So I don't have that. It's one of our weaknesses. We're not really a high-tech transit agency at all. If you were to ask that question of some of our partners in the region, they could look it up on their technology and tell you exactly where they're getting on and off at. And we want to be there. We're working on it. It's actually a capital project for this coming year. But I don't have that information.
Do you think that should be a focus?
And getting our technology up to speed?
Well, no. Getting basically, you know, the customers who are going to the shopping centers and, you know, using the transit for shopping?
I do. I think it's one of our best potentials on the weekend. I think it's a common trip reason. Yeah, trip. And I'll have to dig in. It could very well be that the factory outlets are on the north end of the Route 1, so we think that could help the route do well on Saturdays. On the Route 24, there's the Lucky Shopping Center on there. But there's not a lot beyond that for shopping. So, but there are some residential down in there that they could board there and go shopping elsewhere. So we'll have to keep an eye on that.
Any potential feedback yet on the new shopping center where Target is?
I don't have an update on that. We're going to have to deal with that next month. We've been busy implementing these August changes, and it's some pretty major issues, so expect that on your agenda for October.
All right, thank you.
And just to clarify the question Mr. Goff asked there, in a conversation you and I had earlier this week, we are not at this point providing service to the new bus stop in front of Target because we just haven't found a way to modify our route yet. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct, Chair Alden. We tried in the summer to see. We tried diverting the Route 11 through there to serve the new stop, and it caused the system to melt down because the 11 wasn't able to reach its time points on both sides of town due to congestion on Washington mainly. So at that point, we discontinued that little pilot, and now we're trying to figure out the best way to serve it. So as of now, the new stop that's on Kenilworth in the middle of the shopping center is not being served, and there's no sign up there at this point. So service to the shopping center consists of the pair of stops up on Washington, one in front of the swim center, the other in front of Jack in the Box across the street.
Thank you.
Dave.
Mr. Gann.
Joe, building on the student-oriented services, I know that our marketing towards students have been focused on the junior high and high schoolers, and for obvious and very good reasons, and I'm glad to see that Kenilworth is getting a nice boost there. Do we have any measure of elementary school kids using our buses?
That's a really good question, Sheldon. I think there's a handful, but not a lot. And I think the ones that are using it, there's probably a handful that are flying solo, that are riding by themselves, maybe the older elementary school here and there. And I think there's a few moms that accompany their little ones and drop them off via bus and then come home.
How would they show up in the boardings? Because they're free, right?
If they're under six with the adult, they are free. So they could show up in that, and that's a huge category that's we don't really have the ability to distill much out. We'd have to probably ride along and talk with drivers, and because we are so small, they might know, oh, this mom and her boy gets on here every morning going to this school, and this kid rides by himself going to that. So we'd almost have to do a little focus group with the drivers, I think, to really find out.
All right. I only bring it up because the old Bernard Eldridge School is now up and running as a new school now, Loma Vista. And that school, I think more so than the other elementary schools in town, is really not neighborhood-based. And so kids are coming in from long distances. They have Old Adobe does have a bus that can serve those kids if they qualify, I think it is. But you know, there's a bus stop right there. It's right across the street from the Boys and Girls Club. So it might be worth investigating what kind of demand might come from that school in particular, as well as the Boys and Girls Club. But then in general, you know, I think it's no accident that you know, Kenilworth is showing the uptick, that students are where we're seeing the increase in ridership. I think, you know, the younger generation is going to be more used to public transit, and the earlier we can get them, even at elementary school, I think the better. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's something for us to think about in the long haul in terms of an elementary school outreach.
Yeah. Makes sense. Tawny Berger, our marketing assistant, is here, and you're going to hear from her later, but we can make contact with the school and see if there's anything we can do for them, or kind of market, get information at least to the hands of parents, because like you say, if it is drawn from the entire region, the community, there might be an opportunity for some to take the bus to school.
Thanks.
Any other comments? Hearing none, I guess we move on to the TAC role expansion. Once again, Mr. Rye.
This is just an update mainly because there's two new TAC members, although only one's with us at this point, and nothing's happened since we last addressed this at the special meeting on June 27th. This is just an informational item. Actually, no, Yeah, we do have, it was a discussion and of approval to continue ahead with the request. The nature of this is the TAC expressed a desire to have a more active role in the development review process, to where the TAC would formally review stuff and submit requested conditions of approval so that the land uses that come into our community are more friendly to transit and supportive of what we're doing. We're already sort of doing that through staff, myself, but this would be take it to another level. And just want to make sure that the current TAC discusses it and feels the same way. The only new news that I've gotten on it is that it's not on the agenda yet. The original idea that we were going to do was to partner with PBAC had a requested change to their enabling legislation that would also needed to go to council for approval. They may or may not do that, but that was the idea. And so far it hasn't been agendized yet, though, and the city manager's out of town. So it may not go until like later in the fall. I don't have a date yet. But we want to make sure that the TAC still intent is still there to do that.
Yeah, so the one person this is really directed at is Mr. Irvin. You know, previously we've met roughly every other month. Now the thought is every month, first Monday, 4 o'clock. Does that cause you any heartburn?
I actually read the...
If the button's up, you're on.
I read the synopsis last night on my computer before I came, and I wasn't aware of the issue, but I am now. It's my understanding that this would be a little bit more time intensive. Myself, I would bow to the consensus of the group. If we need to meet monthly, that's fine. I'm fine with that.
Very good. Any other discussion? Hearing none, I'll enter. Mr. Ginn.
Just one question for you, actually.
Sure.
Because I know you're familiar with the process for development approvals. Could you refresh our memories on conditions of approval and what that entailed? What would we be asked to do on these reviews again?
Actually, the process is evolving a little bit. I now sit on the Park and Rec Committee, and because of that, I'm the liaison to the PBAC, so I actually sit on three different committees. I know, it's whatever, it's a whole other story. I sat through the PBAC meeting last night, and we talked about how the way planning wants to interact with PBAC is evolving. They used to come to PBAC very early in the process and just look for some general guidance. Now they're looking to move PBAC back a little further in the process where there can actually be a staff report that comes from planning, and the response from PBAC would be a actual list of suggested conditions of approval or a report, let's say, that goes back to planning, and they would then fold into the eventual approval. Like I say, it's still evolving. Nobody's quite sure how it's going to fit together. If we get to the same place that PBAC is in terms of our role in the process, I expect we would have a similar process to PBAC. So what would happen tentatively is we would get a report from planning. We would say, these are the issues we really want addressed. We need a bus stop here. We would write that back to planning. They would put it into the conditions of approval that the developer would then have to comply with when he built.
So our... what the output of our decisions is advisory to the planning committee.
Advisory to planning, and of course, depending on the project, they sometimes are not the final decision maker themselves. They go on to planning commission and city council.
And then, I believe the intent was to get us in there early enough in the planning process to have our bus stops, you know, in the actual, you know, close to the original planning. Is that the intent?
The intent would be to have our thoughts on bus stops, whatever other transit issues may arise, become part of the conditions of approval.
Right.
So it's part of an essence of the contract between the city and the developer on what the developer will do.
Right, because I felt that we were coming in late, you know, before, after the fact that it had already been approved. On some of the shopping centers.
Coming in late and to some extent not coming in at all because we really were not part of the process.
Okay. So that's the intent.
That is the intent, correct.
All right.
Mr. Rye, you concur with that?
Oh, very well explained, yes.
Okay.
So I guess on
Mr. Kearney.
Sorry, Mr. No Chair. Problem. So on that, do we have to vote to approve that that's the direction we want to go?
I believe that's the case.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for a motion, unless you have another question.
No, I'll make the motion.
Okay. Mr. Kearney makes the motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Mr. Goff makes the second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Rye, back to you again regarding meeting dates and times.
Okay, this is just to formalize what we did somewhat on the fly since last meeting to now. Back in June at the special meeting, we discussed how a 4 p.m. start would be better for this TAC. And we looked at some potential dates. We were also having some issues with the second Thursday. So staff was tasked with then seeing if we could get a 4 o'clock slot on either the first or third Thursday of the month. At this point, it's still kind of every other month, pending the outcome of the prior item. So we went ahead and did some research on that. And tonight's meeting was scheduled on the first Thursday at 4 p.m., mainly because many first Thursdays at 4 or not at 4, but many first Thursdays at 6, both Shelley and myself have to stay for airport commission. So it made good sense, and it seemed to be one of the two dates you guys felt equally good about. So we went ahead and scheduled that. So this item is just to formalize that you'd like to continue meeting on the first Thursday at 4 p.m. And then we'll set I think next meeting we'll have an item for setting our calendar dates for next year. Of course, tentative or pending what happens with the land use review item.
Very good. Any questions? By my only comment, Joe, the reason we'd gone from first Thursday to second Thursday was to give you more time to put monthly travel data together. I know we're probably not going to see it in many cases now, but if you could make a point to email it to us when it does become available later in the month, that would be great. With that note, I'll entertain a motion.
Well, I'll move the motion.
Councilmember Kearney makes the motion. Do I hear a second?
Sure, I'll second.
Mr. Ginn makes a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Adopted. Thank you. And Mr. Rye, we stay with you regarding no smoking signs.
Great. Thank you, Chair. Wanted to do an update. This item's been coming up at our meetings quite frequently lately, and since we last got together, staff was approached by Ms. Pam Granger of the American Lung Association with an offer of a partnership to try to find a way to get they want more signage up. I've been reticent to put too much or too big signage up, so we've currently just executed at our last meeting. We talked about these I may have one with me. These 2-inch by 2-inch no smoking squares, stickers that are UV treated, so they're more for outdoor use. And we went ahead and got those all installed. The project was just completed last week by our bus stop janitorial crew, so they did it in their course of their work. And so that happened. We were able to get those installed. But beyond that, Ms. Gilbert, the original requester of the ordinance expansion, and Ms. Granger requested that we do something to put up some more permanent signs at the shelters, because, you know, the stickers can be pulled off, they can be defaced, you know, bad things happen to them in the weather, that sort of thing. So the partnership offer that's before you today is that they have offered to provide us with 100 or more 5-inch by 7-inch signs, would be like about that, that we would install on the shelters, which are 39 in the community, out of like 160 bus stops. So it's about a fourth have shelters, if my math is solid. It seems like a great opportunity to do so. They even provided us a lead on a contractor that's interested in doing the work, so I reached out today and we played phone tag, but we should have a quote by next month, if not even more, you know, more started. We could do it even quicker if you guys want me to. So that's at the bottom. The recommendation is, do you want to do this partnership? And if so, if I can get quotes lined up, should we start before the October meeting or just bring back an update and do it after the October meeting? You know, what's the tax desire on this project?
I think we should set a limit as to how much we want to, you know, pre-authorize mm-hmm. you to spend. But I'm thinking that this is a partnership with who again? The American Cancer Society?
The American Lung Association's providing us the signs, so we're just on the hook for the labor for install.
Okay.
And then, of course, later on for replace and vandalized ones and stuff like that.
Going to be installing how many approximately?
I believe she said they have. They may give us between 100 and 150. If we go, I met with Pam recently to talk about where they wanted to see them. For sure, inside the shelters, and some places, depending on what's behind the shelter, some places behind and some on the end. So probably like 3 per shelter. So
have you seen the signs and how are they installed?
We're not quite sure how they'll be installed. It may be riveted in.
Okay.
We have a couple examples where signs are riveted right onto the aluminum shelters that are in the community now. Other places, they may have a different install, maybe drilling and, you know, bolting them in. So we're not sure about that yet. I want to talk about that with the contractors that are interested in doing the project. But they'd be permanently affixed. It wouldn't be like taped or glued.
Right. I'm kind of inclined to give you a maximum amount to spend before you have it, you know. If it comes back, you need to come back or goes over that amount. So
that'd be fine because we're going to meet again in a month.
Mr. Chair. What part of the budget would it come out of?
We have transit miscellaneous capital. The way the city of Petaluma finance works, it'll end up actually hitting our operating budget. All our little capital projects do, if they're not a huge amount of money. So it'll be in the current budget. There's money in there to do stuff like this.
So I'm looking at the budget. The next item on the agenda, 6A, we have a wonderful handout on the budget. And can you just help me find where that would fit into?
Probably the it would probably either be professional services or outside repair and maintenance, or the all covering miscellaneous somewhere in there. But I'm guessing outside repair or professional service.
So I might recommend miscellaneous since there's wiggle room there, as opposed to the other two, which have overages.
Right. Well, that was last fiscal year, though, Gabe.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah, no, miscellaneous is a good one for this.
I know you haven't seen a quote yet, but do you have any sense of what the cost might be to mount the 100-some signs?
I really don't, but I don't think it's... I hope it's not going to be too high, but I don't have a sense for how much it's going to be.
Okay.
It seems like a couple days' work for sure.
I would think at least that.
Yeah.
Mr. Goff, you had talked about maybe setting a limit. Did you have a number in mind?
I'm looking for Joe to give me some leadership on that, but I don't want to throw out a number just to throw out a number.
We could look at it like 2,000 or less, or 1,000 or less.
What is that based on?
I don't know. We're just totally guessing at this point.
I think we just need, I hate to prolong it, but I think we need more information. I mean, to just arbitrarily say an X figure, I don't know. Unless there's, you base it on some limits that we have internally as opposed to what we anticipate it would cost.
No, we didn't specifically budget for this. It's, as mentioned, it's just kind of going to be in our miscellaneous capital projects that come up each year that we have some money for. So the month will go by fast. Today's the 5th. By the time it could take a week to get quotes. I mean, I've got one lead, but we really need two or more. So it certainly would maybe be wise to just, you know, request direct staff to get it all ready and bring it as an item at the October meeting with two or more quotes so we can move ahead with it, you know. That way we don't have to guess on a price that we really don't know.
Are there any community outreach groups analogous to Rebuilding Together Petaluma that perhaps could do this?
That was actually an idea that the Lung Association folks thought. They didn't have anyone specifically in mind. They figured we would know someone that would want to do it. I'm like, well, I haven't really, we don't. But if we did, that would be a great project.
They might be an organization to check with. They have a fall community service program.
Yeah, that is an excellent idea. Thank you.
You good?
So I think what I'm hearing the consensus being is that we're not going to give any authorization now. We're going to ask Mr. Wright to come back to our October 3rd meeting with direction either regarding a contractor or a community organization that will do the work. Is that?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Okay. That. Will somebody make that motion?
I will.
Mr. McLean, thank you. A second?
I'll second it.
Mr. Goff, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Adopted. Thank you. We're on the new business. Fiscal year 2012-2013 review. Mr. Roy, I'm going to guess that's Ms. Betts.
That is Ms. Betts. If she would do a presentation for us, that would be great.
Uh-oh. Give me a popcorn.
Good afternoon. The FY13 financial year ended in June, so we're 2 months into FY14. The numbers with finance are not totally final. These are not audited numbers, but they should be a good approximation at this point. We won't have the final numbers until December. So I wanted to give you an overview of the FY13 financial performance, an update on our reserves, our grants, and the outlook for the coming year. For expenses, we ended the year slightly under budget, about 99% of anticipated expenses, so pretty much right on target. Our advertising and staffing costs came in lower than anticipated, and it was made up for by higher costs for professional services and outside repair and maintenance. And this is an overview of what we're spending our money on, right? Slightly over half goes to our contract with MV for operating fixed route and paratransit services. Second largest, 16% supplies, includes fuel and parts, and then 13% on salaries and benefits, and 9% on intergovernmental. Intergovernmental fees include things like IT, finance support, risk management, things like that. Let me know if you have any questions as we go through this, okay?
Emily, is the pass-through for SMART, is that a part of intergovernmental, or it's not on here?
No, it's not included in that. I don't know if you can see these numbers. Maybe you can, but they're also in your packet. Let's see. So this just...
I'm sorry to interrupt. You sparked a question. The pass-through money that we get from SMART, do we charge intergovernmental fees to that? Or is it just a simple pass-through?
We do charge some staff fees, pretty minimal. We charge for our time in passing through the grant.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So as I pointed out, professional services came pretty far over budget. This was mainly cost for the SRTP and then some funds to pay Barbara Duffy to help us transition into the new year. She helped us with the NTD report. And we also had a consultant on board working on a marketing plan for a while, and these funds went to pay for that. Any questions on this?
Emily, could you explain, I'm sure better than I could, the capital ones came in way under. What does that mean to the TAC, really?
Sure. For capital, we budgeted for most of the transit rehab facility project taking place in FY13, as well as buying fare boxes and I think communication equipment for the paratransit vehicles. So essentially those things didn't get purchased in FY13. We have them set up as capital projects in FY14, and the transit maintenance facility it's underway, construction is underway, and we're actually anticipating it being completed by the end of December this year. Capital works on a reimbursement basis, so whatever we spend, we get that money back in, so coming in way under budget isn't really a big deal for our day-to-day operating money, but that's why this dramatic low 12% number is here. But this number, 205,000, as you'll see, matches up exactly with revenue number on the revenue side. So, okay. In terms of revenue, we came in slightly over, good news, 24,000. And a big part of that was due to our fare box revenues, which were 26% over anticipated. Measure M receipts were also over budget, which is a good sign because it's based on sales tax receipts in the county, so that bodes well for the coming year as well. And we just talked about capital revenue shortfalls were linked to the fact that there were delays on the expenditure side. Capital expenditures that were completed in FY13, we purchased one paratransit van, and we installed audio-video surveillance equipment in all of the paratransit vans, and then made some headway on the transit maintenance facility rehab project. So this is a breakdown of where our revenue comes from. just over half coming from TDA, and the rest coming from STA, fares at 12%, Measure M at 12%, and then a combination of other small FTA grants mainly.
Emily, this aggregates both modes that we operate into one. So the 12% fares, we all have heard, and maybe I don't explain enough to you guys, but I'll take an opportunity to grandstand and do it again. The industry standard in California and TDA law suggests a 20% fare box recovery standard for fixed route and 10 for para. So what this is an amalgamation. So 12 is our total, mixing those two together. Do you have any feel for what they are separately, like maybe 16 and 8 or something like that?
I think it was 16 or 17 last time we did.
So we've made a lot of progress. It was like 8 or 9 4 years ago on the fixed side, and even worse on para. So we're getting up there, but that's what that is. So it doesn't mean 12 on fixed. It's 12 mixed together.
Yeah, good point. Here's a breakdown of our actual revenues for FY13. The fares, as you can see, came in 26% higher than expected. The marketing grant, we had just under budgeted for the year regarding what was left on the grant, and that's why that looks so high at 210%. But otherwise, everything came in pretty much as expected. These FTA grants look low because they also operate on a reimbursement basis. So we kind of predicted what we thought we would spend on travel training and Saturday and Sunday service, but then what was actually spent, we received then in reimbursement through the grant. And again, the capital was much lower than anticipated for the year, but we should be making up for that in FY14. Our reserves are looking good, much better than last year. We had some TDA due to the receipt of some PTMACA funding. We had some TDA roll back into our reserves, about $250,000 or $300,000, and that boosted our reserves. We also received another check in June for some state Prop 1B funds. They're called PTMACA funds, and they sort of come whenever the state bonds sell. So we had not budgeted for those, $349,000. So that is allowing us to swap out TDA match for the coming year for a lot of capital projects and is boosting our reserves as well. That was good news for us.
Emily, is that going to be a one-time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Those were funds we applied for, I think, in FY 10 or 11, and then we just received them in June.
All right, the Prop 1B, I think it was, I want to say 2006, it was passed statewide, somewhere in that era when Governor Schwarzenegger was in office. And it was like a 10-year bond measure, so we're about 6 or 7 years in. But there are, it's not one time, I think we have a little bit more. We don't know exactly when we'll get it, but there's about 3 more years worth of funding that we should get over the next 3 or 4 years. We don't know exactly when. It is dependent on bond sales, but there's some more money coming, but we're probably two-thirds of the way into it now.
And that was $349,000?
Yeah, and that was about 3 years worth or so. We hadn't got any for a while.
Mr. Chair? So a question, if you can refresh me on the grants that we get, how many of them are based on population, how many of them are based on ridership numbers? Are any of them based on ridership numbers?
Well,
the NTD feeds into the 5307 federal money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any on the chart, but the 5307 federal money at the MTC level here in the 9-county area, that goes to buy buses or rail cars, score 16 projects. So we do get some of that. So in a way, our increase in ridership isn't exactly directly helping us because we were getting buses out of that pot anyway. But yeah, some of it goes into that. So the more passenger miles you carry, which we certainly are in the last few years, that increases the urbanized areas apportionment of the national, whatever gets approved nationally, like in NextT, SafeT, whatever the federal authorization bill is. So yeah, it brings more money in, but then it all gets sort of collected by MTC and dished out for new buses. So we're not really seeing a direct thing as long as they had enough money to buy our buses anyway. But yeah, so that's nexus to ridership. Most of the stuff is population, though.
Any other questions?
Okay. So I included a list of our active grants and some pending grants in your packet as well. So I'll briefly go over those. Our Saturday service grant, we have two of those. One is almost expended, and then we'll be starting on the other one. We're over halfway through our Sunday service grant. That's going to cover us through January or February. So then we'll begin dipping into our regular operating funds to cover Sunday service. We're about halfway through our travel training grant, our current travel training grant, and in terms of our 2011-5307, the only thing that is left is funding for fare boxes, which we'll talk about in a minute. We are only 30% of the way through our rehab project funds, but like I said, we're planning on expending that by December of this year, since the construction is underway. These are the PTMASEA funds at the bottom that I mentioned. It doesn't say $349,000 there because part of that's been pulled out for FY15, but this is the FY13. So that's a little misleading. And then we also recently got a new SCTA TFCA marketing grant for another $60,000 for this year. It's really for over 2 years. In terms of pending grants, we are working with FTA to process our communications equipment grant. We've talked to you about that one before, about the need for MDTs, mobile data terminals, am I saying that right, in the paratransit vehicles. At this point, we're planning on using those funds towards an AVL system instead of the MDTs based on direction from the TAC. And so we're working with FTA to get that application through, as well as the new funds we received to buy two more paratransit vehicles this year. We're working on a pass-through, another pass-through of SMART for $2.5 million, but I think that one's held up right now. I don't think it's going to go through this year. We recently received a grant from MTC jointly with Marin Transit and Napa County Transportation and Planning Authority.
The Vine.
Right. Yeah, NCTPA, and it's through their Spare the Air Youth on Transit grants. It's an expansion, I think, of Safe Routes to School, focusing on encouraging youth riding the bus to school. So we're working with those agencies right now to figure out how the funding is going to be divided. They gave us about half of the total funding we asked for, but yeah, we'll be partnering with Marin Transit and Napa on this project. So I can answer more questions on that. We don't have an agenda item on that right now, do we?
No, we were actually planning on convening the PNG, mm-hmm. Planning and Grants, Planning and Marketing. It's Paratransit and Grants. I knew. Sorry about that. but we're going to want to meet to talk in more detail about that. It just came in the last week or two, so we thought it was a little premature, but we would introduce it this way, put it on the chart, and then we'll meet to talk about it in more detail soon with the committee.
That be shared, you think, by population density? I see $150,000 here.
The seeing as we are the largest city in any of those three jurisdictions, we should be getting a good chunk of it.
I would think so, too.
Yeah, I mean, we're larger than every city in Marin.
I think that there will be a cut off the top for the agency that manages the grant, which will not be us. And then it will be divided probably pretty evenly, but depending on staff capacity. They have a pretty robust existing Safe Routes to School program in Marin that we do not have in place in Petaluma, and that staff is willing to take on a lot of work. They have indicated that they will train us to do something similar, but kind of remains to be seen how we're going to divide up the effort and funding. Part of the idea in applying for the grant is that we could duplicate and share work, but again, it's not clear how that's really going to play out with different transit systems, different counties. So we're talking with them. We have another meeting scheduled for next week.
So just an idea. I mean, it seems like the reduced fare program that we started last year, mm-hmm. has been pretty effective. Yeah. And the idea of maybe expanding it to, I don't know what they consider youth, but if we were to expand it to include those eligible for Board of Governors fee waivers at the junior college, some of those folks could be youth. I don't know what the exact target age is. Sometimes youth is considered up to like 23 or 21. additionally, you know, if we could use this to cover the cost of what the reduced fares are for our high school program that we have, I mean, that has increased ridership pretty successfully, right?
Yes.
So, and it's something that we could probably share with those other agencies as something that's been effective in getting more folks on the buses, mm-hmm. And helping underserved communities. Mm-hmm. Just an idea.
I agree. That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Emily, how soon do you think we'll have enough evolution of the scope and the division of the funds to meet with the Para and Grants Committee to really go over the details?
Well, we're meeting on the 11th with the other agencies to finalize the budget and how we're dividing the budget. So that will give us a much clearer indication of what we can take on in Petaluma.
I've got a question about the name for the program, Safe Routes to School. Obviously, I'm completely supportive of the concept, but I've heard that name used three times recently. The police department talked about rolling out a Safe Routes to School program during the opening of school last week. City Public Works is working on a Safe Routes to School program that I assume is marking bike lanes, things of that sort. And then we're talking about a Safe Routes to School. Are these all three aspects of the same program, or are we just overusing the same title?
Yeah, I mean, that was a little misleading. So this is called, we're calling it Youth on Transit. I can't remember the MTC term for this. It's one section of a larger umbrella, and the umbrella is, I think it's Safe Routes. It's a Safe Routes to School umbrella. So they're funding other things with their Spare the Air funding. One of the pieces of the Spare the Air Safe Routes to School funding is using transit. I don't know if they call it Safe Routes on Transit or Youth on Transit. So we're focusing on the transit part. But I guess to get at your question, no, this isn't really overlapping with the other. At least it's not part of the same program that you were referring to.
But the money is coming from the same overarching sources, coming down different channels, and the same name is getting all to the bottom line.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different Safe Routes to School funding. There's federal and state, and yeah, usually not local. So those are probably getting funded at a different level.
Okay, thank you,
Chair. I will say, I sit on the transit oversight or advisory committee for the California League of Cities, and what one jurisdiction calls Safe Routes to School and how they use that money and how another one uses it, and Marin is actually a very vocal player at the table when we discuss this in a very large committee setting. And so, yes, the funding is used in many very differing ways, especially in some counties in the state of California in which they don't see transit as a priority, and they don't want the state coming in and telling them how their kids should be getting to or from school. Hopefully I'm saying that politely, but it's a very interesting, anytime this topic comes up, it's a very lively debate in our meetings. And so I think that I don't think that the name was being overused. I think it really is this overarching umbrella of funds that gets used in many, many very different ways.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, it's similar to like the border security bill at the federal level that included, you know, money for a museum in Iowa, you know, things like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and again, I'm sorry for the vague representation of this grant. We really just don't have the details pinned down yet.
Understood. Actually, could I go back up one table and ask a different question? Looking back up at the first two grants under the approved grant list, it looks like we're using funds from a JARC grant dating from fiscal year 2010, and when that's used up, we'll begin using the funds from an 09 grant. How does it come that it plays out that way?
I think what happened, this is before my time, but that Caltrans had some expiring JARC funds that had not been used, and so they just decided to award them to Petaluma because we had a pending grant application or underfunded grant application.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of those, can you spin it quick? Yes, okay, it's yours. So we said yes.
We have also received notice recently from Caltrans that we have been partially awarded three of the grants that we applied for through the New Freedom JARC program. The travel training phase two was awarded for the first year fully, so that's great news. The other two projects, which were to study and fund night service and to conduct community outreach to the Latino population, were funded at about a sixth of what we asked for. So we haven't really had confirmation from Caltrans yet on whether a local match is required for these and really what the total amount of funding is going to look like for us. But so we're waiting to find that out, and then we can figure out what can be done with these funds. We had asked for, I think, $260,000 for night service, so obviously $37,000 is not going to cover that. So hopefully more on that at the next meeting.
How about the next one, the Latino community outreach?
That's definitely something that can be scaled down much more easily. We had asked for, I think, $30,000 to $40,000 to have someone on staff part-time over the next 2 to 3 years, and this would fund that at a lower level, I assume. So we haven't looked at that.
How much did we apply for?
I think it was $30,000 to $40,000. I can't remember exactly how much. Okay. So it was less than half that we received.
If I could say, I think the thing that has me scratching my head the most about what we'll do is the night service one. I think that Emily's leading you guys towards that. $37,000, even if we sat down tonight and decided the service plan, $37,000 is only going to go a few months' worth. So it's really such a small funding amount. Maybe we try to work with Caltrans to just do a study of what we should do and then wait for more money, real money, to come along to do it, because $30,000 ain't going to do a lot. You know, but it might do a study. You know, we could probably do the planning study for it. So I think that was the one that's kind of got us wondering what our next steps are. If indeed that's the award, will they then let us do a document that leads us to service? But they can't really expect us to run much with that.
That wouldn't even really cover like a shuttle once a night, like to like do the loop around town and that's it. Like, you know, from downtown to like Snow Mountain Parkway and around. That wouldn't even cover that for the year. I mean,
right. Yeah, it's not a lot. It wouldn't last for very long. But bless their hearts, at least they gave us something.
So you will ponder that and come back to us with thoughts next month?
Yep, we'll bring an update on that. Maybe to the para and grants committee first, but if not, to the whole TAC or both.
Very good.
Okay, so in terms of outlook for FY14, we have been able to build our reserves, and the outlook for the next 10 years is looking pretty good in terms of reserves, either building or staying constant. Our preventative maintenance funds that we have been able to receive in the past through 5307 are no longer available, as a side note, so that has impacted our operating costs and budget. Fuel costs have stabilized, but something to always keep an eye on. JARC funds have been eliminated. And so when our Saturday and Sunday JARC funds run out, that's something that will then be paid for out of our operating budget, which is something else that's affecting our long-term forecast. And then New Freedom funds are going to be managed under Caltrans. There's a lot of debate right now about what's going to happen with the large urban area New Freedom funds. We're a small urban area, but it remains to be seen whether mobility management, which is travel training essentially for us, and things like the Latino community outreach study, will be able to be funded in the future.
Thank you. Any further questions? And no action required. So I think that takes us on to the recap of the 2013 Summer Youth Pass program.
And for this item, we're happy to introduce Tawny Berger to talk to you, and she's our marketing assistant and travel trainer part-time, and she's going to give you an overview of the recently concluded Youth Pass and then some ideas on marketing for the future.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tawny Berger. I'm sorry I haven't met most of you yet, but I'm sure that we will. So as Joe mentioned, this is basically the recap of pretty much the failure of the Summer Youth Pass this summer. And, you know, I came into this this year. I just started a number of months ago and came in right before this got marketed. So part of it was that the timing was really off. I think we started marketing with, or trying to do some co-marketing with Sonoma County Transit towards the end of April, beginning of May, which is way too late, but that's just where things were at the time. And there are a few things that we already know are a little bit of a problem, but we don't know how much of a problem, and some of that is not being able to sell passes online. We didn't have a lot of co-branding with Sonoma County Transit this summer. We got a lot of our marketing out late. But when we look at youth or even student ridership across the board, it's fairly low during the summer. So if we look at some of our outlet sales at G&G Market or at 4th and C, who predominantly sell a lot of student passes, they are dramatically lower during the summer than they are during the school year. So during the school year at G&G Market, let's say, they can sell up to 70 student passes a month. And this summer, they were averaging about 8 student passes a month. And they were selling the summer youth pass, and there they probably sold 20 total, and they were our highest sales outlet for the summer youth pass. So across the board, student ridership is a lot lower. Even at the Santa Rosa Junior College, the student pass sells dramatically less than it does. So one of the things that we're looking at doing is a marketing research focus group at 4 of the schools, and it might be interesting to throw one of the elementary schools into there, whether it's Miwok, that I know has a bus stop right nearby, or Bernard Aldridge. But what we'd like to do is talk to the junior highs and the high school students, get a mix of riders and non-riders, and really start to ask them questions really specific to the summer youth pass, trying to find out why they're not riding in the summer in general, and if they are riding, are they just paying per ride, or why aren't they interested in a summer youth pass, which is dramatically less money than buying even a monthly pass. It's 24 for 3 months versus 60. So we're going to be kicking those off a little bit later this month, and we already have them scheduled at each of the junior high and high schools. A few other things were, we tried a couple of new platforms for advertising this year. We advertised at the movie theater. They have the advertising when you're sitting there waiting for the movie, behind the movie. And we had an advertisement there, and then at the Lucchese Community Center, they have a scrolling TV right behind the desk. And we know that they also sell a lot of passes there, so we put an advertisement there displaying the summer youth pass. It wasn't for lack of putting this information out anywhere, it just was either the timing, and maybe students just aren't riding in the summer. Maybe it really is that you get to ride to school and back and that's it. You don't get to ride downtown, you don't get to go to the movies. We don't know, so we're trying to figure that out.
Could I ask a question real quick?
Of course.
So, Facebook? Have we used Facebook for advertising?
Yes. Yes, we have. But we also have a very, very low amount of likes. That's also something that we've been promoting a lot more since I started.
Okay.
So we even did things like going to the school and passing out raffles that if you like us on Facebook, you could win a summer youth pass. We got, I think, 3 likes.
Okay.
And I passed it out to tons of students. We also gave them if students did buy a summer youth pass at any of the outlets, there was a little card that if you like us on Facebook, you could win. We've been doing a lot of things to try to generate more likes on Facebook. I don't know if we need to post some crazier pictures or what, but
well, I guess I was asking more about like advertising, like paid advertising on Facebook.
I haven't done that yet.
In looking at driving people towards a page to buy the mm-hmm. pass, but you said that we didn't have online sales for the pass?
We don't have online sales for the pass yet. We're working on getting that onto our site, but it hasn't been approved yet.
And then the other thing is the students that are buying the monthly passes at the high schools, right, because you can buy them at mm-hmm. the schools now, are they getting the information about the summer youth pass?
Yes. And that's something that we'll try to do even more. So a lot of our students that buy them at the schools buy them in the cafeterias where they can buy the quarterly passes. And the quarterly passes are only sold at the cafeteria level in the schools. And part of that is because they can either buy the full rate pass, which is $40 for the quarter, or they can buy a discounted pass, which is determined by whether or not they qualify for free or reduced lunch. And at the cafeteria, that's where they have that information without having to make a big deal about it. So that's why we put them there. And one of the things that I would like to do next year is when we are selling the final quarterly pass, we say quarterly, but it's really four times within the school calendar, so it's not a three-month pass. But I'd like to have them be giving all those students information while they're selling that final quarter so that they know, hey, if you come back here in May, you can also buy a quarterly pass, or give them a flyer that says this is available as well. Because they may or may not know about it, despite advertising on the buses, advertising in the school newspapers, putting it in the bulletins, putting it at every single outlet. You know, there are still ways that theoretically they should see it, but if they're not looking for it, they may not know about it. So yes, long answer to your short question. You're welcome.
Any other questions? One thought I'd like to offer. The surveys, I think, are a great idea. But my speculation would be two of the reasons you're having a hard time getting ridership is students' lack of imagination about places they could go mm-hmm. on the bus, and parents being spooked about whether they really want their kids getting on a bus over the summer.
Right.
And I would like the survey to explore those two areas and make sure we're truly finding out if those are concerns and maybe ideas how to deal with them.
Okay, I'll add those to the list.
No, and then if I could just clarify the what we're going to do this month. Normally we do it all in the spring, but because there's an urgency to figure out what's wrong with our marketing campaign for the Summer Youth Pass, we want to go ahead and move that forward to the fall. So we've actually scheduled, just today I was able to confirm up our event at CASA, and the other day we got Kenilworth. We're working on maybe Petaluma Junior and maybe one other place, and it'll be the days of the September 18th through 20th, so late that week. We'll get these. These will be focus groups, so we'll actually ask the kids to talk about these very topics that you mentioned, Dave. Are they getting pushback from their parents not to ride? Is it the opposite? Do the parents want them to ride and they just don't want to go anywhere? That's the kind of stuff we really want to discover. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do the onboard survey in the spring like we usually do, because that never gets as personal. That's more like, oh, where'd you hear about Petaluma Transit? Newspaper, radio, Facebook, blah, blah, blah. So we'll do that like normal, like in March or so, February or March.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tony.
I'm not sure when the appropriate time to ask this question would be, but Mr. Kearney had mentioned something about Facebook, which reminded me about new technology, Facebook applications on cell phones, and I was curious if there's any kind of application app for a smartphone that might update riders when they're waiting for a bus on the status of the bus. Is there any kind of program like that available?
There is, and it'll hopefully, with any luck, it'll be part of the AVL project that I believe Emily mentioned and I might have mentioned a little bit earlier. It'll be an add-on to that. So the AVL is an automatic vehicle location system, so that identifies where the bus is at. We have a real rudimentary one now, but it doesn't have that much capability. But the full-blown ones that we'd be looking at, from that you can then have a smartphone app where, you know, there's some labor involved. We'll have to go out and number our bus stops, for example, but then there'll be a sign, you're at bus stop number 109, for example, and then they can pull that up on their smartphone, and then it'll predict for them. Or they may, depending on what the vendor is, I mean, there's a lot of vendors out there, they may be able to actually look at a map, although someone mentioned to me the other day that maybe maps aren't the best way for everyone. If you don't know how to read a map, it's not good. But you can get it in text form, too. It's like, oh, bus number three in 3 minutes, or bus number three in 27 minutes, then you know you just missed it, that sort of thing. So, yes, that's kind of all part of where we're trying to go with the automatic vehicle location systems. So then you add on signage at key bus stops, can even be LED signage that tell you when the next buses are coming. Like at Copeland, we have sort of one there. So if you go look at it, it'll tell you when the next buses are due to roll into the Copeland Transit Mall. It's in the center kiosk. And we'd be just taking that to another level and having that for all stops around town, at least via smartphone. They won't all have TV monitors like that. Yeah, that's the direction we want to head for sure.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Kearney.
I've seen it in D.C. they have it, and I actually think it works better in D.C. than it does on Muni in the city. partly because cell phone coverage in San Francisco is horrible. And so it's hard to get the app to load. And anyway, so that helps some folks that might not be our traditional riders who are sketchy or nervous about riding transit because of the reliability of time. That will help us with our get the confidence level back into folks that, oh, wait, this doesn't just run once a day. And it lets them know, okay, this in 3 minutes I can get on the bus. And I think, you know, when we look at programs like that, I was surprised at how many people rode the bus for free during the Butter and Eggs Day Parade. They were like, oh, wow, the buses are nice and they're clean. And it was like, you know, we didn't have to deal with parking. But I feel like not enough people knew about it, you know. So, you know, I think even though I try and talk up transit as much as I can everywhere I go, and especially brag to my other council members from other cities about how great our transit system is and theirs isn't, we still have this gem that we're sitting on that we don't brag about enough, and people don't see as being as efficient and as successful as it truly is. Because, I mean, if you just look at the numbers statistically, all the numbers show that we're running with the best transit system in the county, if not in the North Bay comparatively to, you know, our neighbors to the south. And so, you know, it's just getting that word out there and getting that confidence in folks that, you know what, I can rely on Petaluma Transit to get me from point A to point B in the time that they say they're going to get us from point A to point B, and it's reliable. So, you know, we've hit the youth market, but it's the other folks that we need to get. And especially as we ramp up to the theoretical start of Smart Train, especially since we only have that one station downtown, if you're someone like me who, I have an office in San Rafael, an office in Santa Rosa, within a mile of where the train stations are going to be, I'm not going to park downtown Petaluma to get on the train station, you know, to get on the train. So I would have to get on Petaluma Transit somehow and to get to the train to then use it effectively. And so, you know, we need to get that confidence going in folks ahead of time, so that way we're really set to thrive when that train station opens up in 2020 or whenever it is. So I don't know if you can tell I'm not too optimistic about that system. But, you know, I think we're really poised to succeed with that as we move forward.
One thing I think we forgot to mention somehow, I don't have an ETA for it, but it should be pretty soon. It was quite the struggle to get the agreement through. Otherwise, the goal was to have it ready for a couple of weeks ago when we went back to school, and there were so many new riders and parents looking for PT information, for information on Petaluma Transit. But we have a mobile website, because you all know the frustration of trying to use a non-mobile-friendly website on your smartphone. Well, our mobile website's under construction. We should have it ready by maybe our next meeting, so that will be exciting. And it's being created by the Press Democrat Media Lab, who they just recently did. You can check out their work right now if you want to go to Sonoma County Transit site with your smartphone, and that's the model they're using for ours. So ours will be similar. Of course, different colors, cool logo and all that, but it'll be the same thing, and it really makes it easier for the smartphone user to access. It's not real-time information yet, but it's a start. It's information when you're out at a bus stop that doesn't have an information post or whatever. It'll tell you when the bus is supposed to come, and that's usually 90% accurate, so that's good. So it's a start. So we should have that ready to debut, you know, this fall.
Okay. Thank you for the update. And again, not quite on topic, or actually close to on topic, but maybe not quite on agenda, with regard to Mr. Kearney's comment about getting the word out. If anybody hasn't seen today's Argus Courier, there is a very good article regarding how we have basically supplanted the old yellow bus system for the school district. Mr. Rye gets a lot of credit, and appropriately so. If you haven't seen the article yet, please look for it.
Thanks, David. Forgot about that.
If we address that in the manager's comment, then we won't be violating the Brown Act.
I'm sorry, what?
I was just suggesting if we wait till the transit manager's comment.
Okay.
Then we won't be, you know, off agenda.
That's true.
I'll try to remember to.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll get back to it.
Yeah, we're not supposed to stray too far off.
We've been wandering, but okay. Mr. Kearney's here to keep us on track.
Or just prevent a lawsuit, you know.
That's what we love about him.
Okay, to get back on agenda then, Mr. Rye, alternative fuels.
Oh, okay. Thank you. At our last meeting, we did, or it may have been two meetings ago, but not long ago, we did an overview of a number of the different fuel sources that are available in the transit bus market. And this is all working towards some strategic decisions on infrastructure with the next group of four fixed route buses that we'll be ordering in a couple years, which will come quicker than you think. So, today, we were asked to come back by the TAC last time and talk in more detail about CNG, which is compressed natural gas. So the report you have there, I'm not going to just read it verbatim, but for the audience watching, the CNG is widely used in the transit industry. It's really expanded and successfully in the last 10 years or so. It was mandated in Southern California by large MPOs like SCAG in the Los Angeles area that all transit providers, which in LA I think is like 30 or 40 providers, have to be CNG. So that really gave the CNG fuel industry a boom. And then over the years, some of the initial problems that were a detriment to the CNG engines, such as engine reliability and stuff, they've really made great progress on because so many properties have jumped on board. What has also happened, especially in the last few years, is the price of CNG has went way lower in a diesel gallon equivalent comparison than diesel itself. So now CNG fuels are significantly cheaper. And depending on who you listen to, the projection is it'll stay that way for a while, but there's no guarantee. So anyway, recently, in order to build up some personal knowledge and some fresh information for the committee, I had a visit from Clean Energy Corporation, which is one of the largest firms in the CNG business, and they sort of have a special arm of their business that works with transit agencies. So they're capable of analyzing a site to see if it's feasible to site a fueling station, and then they have a couple different options for actually getting the station operative and installed on the facility, all with the idea that you'll be committed then to buy CNG moving forward and this, that. So in your packets should have been a PowerPoint presentation from Clean Energy. Did you guys all receive that? Because I wasn't sure what went out in the packet.
I don't believe we did get that.
Ooh. Okay, that's not good. So I probably omitted putting it in there somehow. I'll send that out then under separate cover, and I do apologize. What we can do is we can stay this item and bring it back in October, which will come quick enough, and we can go through the presentation. It's there. What's the word? It's their marketing tools, so again, take it for what it's worth, but it's very impressive and it shows a lot of the attractive aspects of the CNG fueling station.
Go ahead. Quickly. Mm-hmm. Do we have room to build a station?
They're preliminary. From the first visit, they say yes, and they think that where we put it on our concept plan, seems like 2 years ago, I guess, when we started this whole rehab facility project, they thought that was the best spot. They were, they weren't going to commit to it in writing yet, but they measured it and they looked like they,
all right,
they thought it would work. It's not final yet, but so then one thing that comes up is we do have a construction project popping as we speak. They've yet to start tearing down the building and putting up the new end of the building. So we are working with the Clean Energy folks because they're also experts in the modifications you need to make sure the maintenance bays that are going to deal with CNG buses have the proper ventilation equipment and stuff, because it just takes a few different things than diesel, because CNG is lighter than air, so it tends to, when it escapes, it floats up. So there's some equipment and sensors need to be run and in the building. So we're going to get that information ASAP in real time, and then we'll be able to evaluate whether we want to pull the trigger and at least get that by change order into our new building. So by the October meeting, when we come back with the PowerPoint, we can go through that. We also will hopefully have some estimated costs to do an on-the-fly change if we want to equip the shop to be CNG ready.
or more CNG ready. We'll have to see. There's an electric load issue too. That could be a costly one. We're getting new electric service to the building, which is has much more capacity and amperage and stuff. But I don't know if it'll be enough. So we'll find that out because we hadn't specced it for a CNG compressor, which is very power hungry.
Mr. Chair,
As far as energy alternative to the diesel gas, what other, besides compressed natural gas, CNG, is hydrogen at all being used in some cities or no?
Hydrogen's been, yes. They've had a pilot project at AC Transit and Golden Gate and VTA in San Jose, and it's been ongoing for a while, and I can get some information on what's going on because I don't even see their hydrogen buses out much anymore, so I don't know what the determination on feasibility was, but I know they went a long ways into it. They have a fueling station. I believe it's at the Coliseum AC Transit Yard and one of VTA's yards. So, yeah, I don't have much information to tell you right now, but I can do some research and see how that went and is going.
Because if I recall correctly, it was maybe like 5-6 years ago, SF held this big, huge like transportation conference where they rolled out these hydrogen buses and a couple other alternatives as well. I think like a hybrid bus or something like that. And so I would just curious to see what the other options are, and what the cost would be for those. And feasibility, and so we can compare them kind of side by side, because I mean the CNG is probably our best option, especially since when we look at the cost of the scale, since most transit agencies are going to these, it lowers the cost as opposed to hydrogen, which it sounds like you know isn't really getting off the ground.
Yeah. I think what I was hoping to do, and if the TAC is interested in it, is this was just kind of the first detailed look at one fuel, because I think it came up in our conversation as being one of the more likely ones. But we were just talking with staff yesterday about electric buses, like fully electric, not hybrids, but that should be one we look at too, because hybrids have been around for 10-15 years, and I've had them in my fleets before. So we could get a current state of the world on hybrids, and so do like a little white paper on them, and then fully electrics too, because I think they've made great strides on electric vehicles lately. We just have to do the research and find some good examples of that. But I don't want you to believe that we're just saying, CNG, this is it. Let's start digging super deep into this. So that really, you know, that's something to keep in mind when we're looking at this maintenance shop alterations. If it's stuff we can do later that won't really save a lot of money doing it now, and we're not ready to commit to it, we'll just hold it off. But at least we'll have a price for it.
Well, I know that Hyundai and Toyota and Ford are all looking at alternative bus fuels. I think Hyundai is experimenting with the pure electric vehicles, and I think Toyota is with the hybrid technology for buses, and I'm not quite sure where Ford is, but Ford is, you know, in that mix of something. So, I mean, they are being worked on, different alternatives, but Hyundai has been working on their pure electric buses for maybe 8 to 10 years now.
Emily, do you think we could come back with some, you know, not completely perfect information, but can we come up with something on electric buses by the next meeting? Maybe if we both combine on that, and then we'll follow up with more on the CNG because somehow it didn't make the packet.
Joe, can you give me an idea, typically, what the cost of a city bus would be?
The clean diesels that we got a couple years ago were a little over 400, maybe 410. $410,000. An equivalent CNG of the same size with all spec equally, other than the fuelings, probably $500,000. So CNG is about 20% or so, 15 to 20% more up front. But remember, in the MTC kingdom, we don't really have to worry so much about the price of our buses because they're paid for by our 5307 money. It's operating costs and stuff and maintenance costs after that we need to be most and the cost of a fueling station. For example,
so I was in Berkeley recently, and I saw one of the fuel cell buses that I think you were referring to. I did a Google search, and they said between $1.5 and $2 million.
Was it one of the AC Transit ones?
Yes.
Yep.
It was a Neoplan.
Nice. Yes.
And then Cal was using on their campus some type of, I think, pure electric buses.
Yep, that could be. We'll look into that.
Has biodiesel been explored?
We should do a little paper on it, because that's something that we, well, I can't say, because we do fuel at an off-site station, but it's very feasible, because our engines probably could use it now. We should. We haven't explored it much yet.
For whatever it's worth, I spoke with Brian, and I went to the Cummins website. Now, Brian said they are not compatible with our existing buses, but the Cummins website, which is the engines that are in our buses, state they can use B20, which is 20% biodiesel.
Right. Well, that's good to know. Sounds like you've done some research on it. We can, if the TAC is interested, we can definitely look at biodiesel, because that's a step we can take, assuming we have control of a tank. That's the deal. I mean, there are issues. We're fueling at the school district's property at this time, and we don't have a fueling station for diesel on our own facility. But where there's a will, there might be a way. So we can definitely look at biodiesel.
And you may perhaps want to contact Gillig directly, because they're marketing a diesel bus. A hybrid diesel.
Okay, I think this was an information item. Should we then come back with one item to further develop the CNG a little bit, hopefully with some price estimates for the shop modification with the PowerPoint, so I can actually have a prop that I can speak from, and we'll walk through that, and then we can hopefully come up with an electric bus synopsis, and then maybe the following meeting we can look at hybrids and biodiesel, and this can kind of be a standing thing that we go through leading towards a decision. You know, in about a year, we're going to need to know what we want to do.
All right.
Mr. Chair, could we add to that diesel as well? Because my hunch is the council's concern, and when they ask about CNG, is primarily about emissions. This is my hunch. I don't know for sure. And even diesel, you know, that technology is changing all the time. So if we could... ultimately, as a layperson on fuels, I won't be able to make any kind of recommendation at all unless I see that comparison of life cycle costs on top of environmental impacts.
If I may comment on that, being a bus driver myself, I had a discussion with Don and with the bus mechanic at our yard. And perhaps Joe can give some insight on this, but it's my understanding that we have state-of-the-art diesel technology. I mean, I believe we have urea injection, and this may be something we want to promote, because the diesel engine technology that we're currently using is actually pretty cool. Yeah. And if we promote that with, I would think, very minimal investment, we might get some good community goodwill.
Dana brings up a great point. The four 2011 Gilligs that, you know, Councilman Kearney was at when we ribbon-cutted them, and they've been in service for 2 years, they are state-of-the-art. They meet the CARB, California, and national EPA standards, and they use the urea as an after-tank last thing in addition to particulate traps. So they're very clean. So, you know, at this point... you know, Sheldon's probably right. The actual late, and that's half our fleet, so we only have 8 buses, basically. So 4 of them are the 2011s with the latest diesel technology. They're all burning ultra-low sulfur. So, yeah, diesel's not quite the dirty word that it used to be, but the perception out there probably hasn't changed with the times, as fast as the times have. So, yeah, we could definitely, it's a great idea to do a blow-up on what the engines now diesel-wise, and especially what they'll be in 2015 or so, or 16, when we actually get these things.
We may want to consider a transition from gasoline to clean diesels for the paratransit fleet.
That's true. We could. Yeah, because we're still using gasoline on para vehicles.
Good.
Any further questions? And Mr. Wright, do you have enough direction for next month?
I think I do. Thank you.
Thank you. That takes us down to the committee reports, but my recollection is neither committee met since the last meeting.
That's correct.
So there's really nothing to discuss? Or did you want to discuss setting a date? There was something came up on paratransit and grant?
Yeah, I think we definitely want to get the para and grants committee together. If the TAC wishes, we can try to schedule it now or follow it up via email.
what's the preference of the group?
Oh. I need an email. Check my calendar.
Do the email. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Email sounds fine.
Okay. Yeah, let's set a goal of trying to have that before the end of the month.
Very good. And then that will get us down to the manager's written summary. Mr. Ryan.
Thank you, Chair Alden. The manager's report was fresh. We just brought it over this afternoon and sent it out because so much has been happening with the August service change, and this is normal in our crazy August lives because we are dealing with such rapid growth and a dynamic market. So we really don't know what's going to happen until school starts. So it's been going pretty well. We're a system straining to deal with more and more growth. We're busier and busier. Routes are tighter and tighter, which means they don't have much flex. They can fall behind very easily when they're stopping at every stop, picking people up and dropping people off. It's a great problem to have, but it is a problem. So anyway, with tax approval back in June, we added a new tripper, which is a bus that's open to the public but especially designed to meet known commute needs of students. So we added a new one, originally slated, and the first 2 days it started at CASA at 3 at CASA High School, and it doubled our capacity going north up Sonoma Mountain Parkway and Ely, because that's where a huge base of CASA kids live. And we were very much at max at capacity the prior year. So that was great. And what we did with this one then, we have it divert off at the end, because we also had some students on North McDowell that traditionally before had grabbed one of the buses and then missed their connection because traffic's so bad at that point and the boardings are so heavy. The connection at Safeway was... we tried all last year, and it just couldn't be done. So and we knew those guys would be interested in a single-seat ride home, so we made it to 33M and diverted it over to McDowell and bring it down McDowell to the end of its work at Safeway. So some of those kids right away liked it. They thought that was great. So that's what the 33M does. It doubles our capacity going up Sonoma Mountain Parkway, and then it deviates off the regular 33, and it goes over to North McDowell and drops off some kids that live up there so they don't have to transfer or hang out at Safeway for half an hour. So that worked really well, but then we started noticing immediately that we're over capacity at Kenilworth, which got a second bus a year ago and filled it up pretty good, but we thought we could hold off a year, but growth's been too rapid there, so that we were experiencing some overcrowding. It came to my attention right away. So luckily I love problems that are fairly easy to fix. So Don and I worked together, so we just started the 33M earlier and added it to the Kenilworth mix. So now there's three buses in addition to the regular Route 3 that come out of there after school. So that's been successful. The first day, nobody wanted it, or first 2 days, and the kids were afraid to get on it, so we reached out to the principal because they wouldn't listen to us. It was kids not listening to me. I'm used to that at home. But we did reach out to Emily at Kenilworth, and she came out to the bus stop, which was great, very collaborative, typical of how well we work together with the schools. So when she said it was okay, then they believed her. So now it's running well, and that's helped alleviate the overcrowding on the other two. And then it still gets to CASA in time to do what it was intended to do at 3 o'clock. One other twist this year is, and we didn't find out about this until like opening day of school, CASA changed their bell times this year a little bit. They've instituted this office hours program from 2:35 to 3, where kids are technically done with their seventh period or whatever number it is, but they encourage them to stay on campus and visit their teachers and do homework and study. And they, when I found out about it, they're like, oh, well, we kind of didn't want you to know because we didn't want you to change anything because we really want the kids to stay on campus and participate. So that's what we're doing. And so far we've gotten a couple parents that haven't been too thrilled with me. But other than that, I just kind of refer them to the school because we're cooperating with what they want to do. And it's been good. We still get, the kids are there at 3 o'clock when we get there. So so far they're pretty pleased with it. But we'll keep you updated if anything changes on that front. And we're very full, so the extra bus has been needed there at CASA, and it's well appreciated. The facility rehab project's really rolling now. We have a weekly meeting, with the contractors, and every day there's little micro meetings where someone will jump in and, what color, we're still checking colors of paint and stuff. The trench for the electric, the new enhanced electric switch gear, I believe is the technical term they use. I have no idea what that means, but it's the electrical box where all the important circuitry is at. They dug the trench, so that's done. Now we're working on getting a pad where the maintenance can take place outdoors while they tear the building down. So we're getting there. It's moving very fast. There's a new construction superintendent that's been very aggressive. He seems very sharp, so the project's really moving now. So we Anyone that wants to come by, and careful, it is a construction zone, but you can see there's a lot going on over there. The interior improvements to the dispatch area are well on their way because they've been underway for a few weeks now. So they're making great progress in there. The parts room, the mechanics office, they're getting framed in pretty good. Any questions on that or anything there?
Any questions from the committee?
Are we on schedule on the construction?
No, but we haven't been on schedule for a long time. No, I can't be sarcastic in these meetings. No, not really. But the you know, the clock is ticking. They have a certain limited amount of working days once they did finally get their building permit. So within that, you know, within that constrained amount of schedule, I think they're only a little behind, but they're catching up pretty quick. So yeah, let's say not once we finally got started, yeah, we're close to on schedule. It looks, you know, it's going to be a race. Let's hope we don't have a really wet early winter. That would be bad.
A couple of questions on other things relating to what might have been in your summary. A year ago, you mentioned that you were concerned on the construction on Washington, that there hadn't been adequate communication with your office. Now there's, once again, construction underway. Has there been communication? Is it going to be an issue as that, I think, waterline replacement continues?
Yeah, there's been good communication within the department. We're all over a year into the consolidated super department of public works and formerly water and public works. So yeah, the communication's there, but does that mean it's not going to hurt? No. The construction's starting to hurt more each day. So we're going to end up at some point when it gets too bad, we'll be closing stops and trying to detour, but it's going to severely impact the system. I'm just hoping it from a bigger picture, once this is over, and it will end, like all construction projects, it will end. We want this year's student ridership to get settled in and embrace the product before the product starts to get destroyed by the construction project. So if they could, the longer they hold out, the better we off will be, but it seems to be picking up every day out there. So it's going to really affect Route 11, which is the crosstown route, which, you know, that feeds into the Route 1T that gets people to Petaluma Junior and Petaluma High and back, and then gets people over to Safeway that are going to Casa and Kenilworth. So it's really, really in a bad spot. So we'll suffer through it, but we're going to have to communicate a lot. It'll be just like last fall. There'll be, you know, detours, and it'll be a challenge. We're glad that Tawny's on board to help with rider alerts, and because it's really interactive. Some days aren't bad, and other days are terrible, as you remember last year. So we're looking forward to that again.
Okay, very good. And I guess that gets us down to the operations summary.
Okay, and this summary looks like page one shows you the July ridership, which was 22,000, almost 23, broken out by passenger type, and then the para ridership as well, which was pretty high at 2,054. if we can point out, the numbers for August came in better. It was like 27,000. So August really got a boost once school came back. For example, the last week of August was the first full week of school because they started on a Wednesday. And we averaged right around 1,500 riders per day, which was previously one of our record. You know, we were having a great day when we hit 15, and we hit that 4 days out of five that last week. And I would expect that this week's numbers are similar or even more. So ridership's off to a good start. But the summer definitely was a low. What helps us in the summer, and I think we might be able to distill it out of these charts. I'm trying to see where. Maybe page two where it shows the... Yeah, if you look on page two, you'll see an inordinate amount or percentage of free transfers in the summer. Certain days more than others, but those days are part of what we call the Class Pass program. It's when preschools, camps, programs at like the Boys and Girls Club or the city's
Tiny Tots
program. We set up a program where the adults and the chaperones pay, but the kids... And this is, again, going after the marketing of the youth so that they're comfortable riding the bus once they're old enough to do so by themselves. So they ride free. And that program has really been popular with these camps and with these programs. So they ride it, and that keeps our numbers from really being bad in the summer. Otherwise, this would be a different situation. So that's, and they show up in that free transfer column in a major way. So if we can ever get the youth pass going and individual teenage trips happening, we'll really be in good shape in the summer because the class pass program keeps our numbers up pretty decent as it is.
Okay. And then how do the July and August numbers this summer compare to previous summers?
I think this July was down from last July or right about flatline, which was, you know, disappointing to me. August is going to be better, though, it looks like, because I don't remember hitting 27 in high change last year. So I think August is better than last August, but July was about the same or a little worse.
Very good. Any other questions?
And if I could point to para, the number, sure, 2054, it's kind of hard to gauge what that is, but the really important numbers are the riders per revenue hour column, which is third, and riders per service hour. And it just this is about where we've been the last few months, so it's pretty steady. It shows how hard the drivers are working, how productive they are out on the street, and how much better our dispatchers are getting really great at working with trapeze. So it's anytime you're over 3 in riders per hour in paratransit, you're doing pretty good. So we're really pleased with them. And Don, if you want to add anything, I think August numbers were way higher. It was like 2,200 and some. So ridership on para went way up in August.
What did you attribute that to?
Nice weather. It was not too hot, not too cold. I don't know. Yeah, we've got new clients that are using the service actively. Okay. Dana, do you have any thoughts on why you're so busy in August?
Well, the only thing that I can think of is the Friday meetings where the new riders go. I'm only anticipating that we're taking in a lot more new riders than we're losing through attrition or whatever. So, yeah, I would imagine new ridership.
Okay. I think I may have skipped one step. I believe there was a question that Tawny intended to respond to during manager's report, something that Mr. Kearney had asked. This would be a great time. We're about to go home. It's a good time.
All right. I'll do it quickly because I also need to go. But you were talking a little bit about just ways that we can get more information out and the amount of ridership that happened at Butter and Eggs Day. And actually, just today, Joe and I were talking about wanting to create more energy and momentum around days where we could provide free service as a way to get those adult riders to ride the bus. So working with the Downtown Association for events like Butter and Eggs Day, Veterans Day, Rivertown Revival, and maybe one or two others, and having it scroll on their website so that it's always there saying what are the free days, but then specifically advertising for the events that we'll be doing because ridership was so high on Butter and Eggs Day. And really trying to create better synergy also with organizations like the Visitor's Center and Downtown Association and places that are Chamber of Commerce, places that are promoting a lot of downtown events, and where we can also step in and reduce the amount of traffic. Like Rivertown Revival has a ridiculous amount of traffic right around Copeland every single year. So if we could provide service during those times and have it advertised all throughout the year, these are the free days. And then also having rider appreciation days that would be more midweek for the actual riders that use it on a regular basis. So trying to create more ways that people have information about what we're doing and create ways for people to have an experience riding the bus.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. And if anyone has any suggestions, I know that every once in a while we do have marketing meetings as well, but feel free to just email me with ideas because you all are out in the community in different ways than I am, and I may be missing opportunities. So please feel free. Thank you.
We may want to do a planning and marketing meeting maybe in October after the next meeting. Give Tawny a chance to rest. This has been her first service change, and due to some issues with my family and stuff, she got thrown to the wolves, so she did a really great job. Just want to thank everybody for that.
Very good. I think that does conclude our agenda. Unless I've missed something.